the food.
Well, buckle up.
Back in the old time machine.
13th century.
Texture, taste.
Very fishy.
Preservatives, Cornish pastiche.
Oh my God, I've never thought of that.
The themes of empire, mission, inheritance, and destiny.
Hello and welcome back to What the Food. This is the podcast that uncovers the origin stories of dishes, food items and drinks from all around the world. We dive headfirst into history to try and figure out why we eat the food we eat. My name is Miles Dickinson. I'm here with the usual culprits, Andy Cantor and Dom Gray. And today we're uncovering the origin of
dim sum.
No,
you're absolutely right. Today we're setting our sights on dim sum. Which,
well,
bit of a cop out because it's not actually a dish. It's more of an array of dishes, I suppose. But you boys had dim sum? You had dim sum before?
I think once or twice in my life.
Me too. I think I might have had it once or twice. Some pork dumplings in a little bamboo basket here and there.
Nice.
A little bamboo basket.
I imagine you've had quite a lot, Andy, because you're a seasoned traveller of the Asian continent.
Correct. That would be a fair assessment. I have had dim sum in China. I've had dim sum in Vietnam, in Thailand, in Japan, in Malaysia,
all right.
In the Philippines.
All right. Someone's been on a gap, y'all.
And in Singapore.
And it's considered dim sum in all of those countries. It's still dim sum. You're not
still
having
dim sum.
Different...
No, because I'm going to Chinese restaurants to have it.
Oh, yeah, because you go to Singapore and then you go to a Chinese restaurant, or you go to Thailand and you go to a Chinese restaurant. You're that kind of traveller, aren't you? You'll be ordering a side of chips with it as well, won't you? Ketchup.
Yeah, I will, mate. I will. But anyway, if you didn't know what dim sum is, it is essentially a collection of small, savoury and sweet dishes that is often enjoyed over tea. Tea is vital for dim sum. Vital.
Okay.
In fact, like in Cantonese speakers, they don't even say they're going to eat dim sum. They would instead say they're going to yum cha, which essentially means drink tea.
Right. Just give me like tapas vibes.
Yeah.
In a way.
Yeah. It's probably a good way to think about it. Yeah. I mean, the tea is like the integral part of any kind of dim sum meal. It helps cut through like the grease, the fat, the carbs, which a lot of kind of dim sum is. And as we'll see in, you know, throughout this episode, the kind of two are intrinsically linked, both. Well, from a cultural point of view, really. Super interesting, because I didn't know kind of much about dim sum, really. Obviously, I had quite a bit of it in China, Singapore, Thailand, Japan.
I was going to say, I thought you were such a seasoned dim summer. You are proud of yourself for that one, aren't you? You teach yourself.
I just wanted to see how far I could get before someone realised.
Yeah, you walked into Hayes Travel on the high street and said, I want a dim sum tour of the world.
Yep. Yeah.
And they've just booked it all in for you.
Yeah, give me a dim tour.
dim tour.
But yeah, I mean, if you've ever seen kind of dim sum being served before, it's kind of, like you said, the bamboo steamer baskets, sometimes metal as well, often pushed around like a restaurant from table to table on little carts, probably see them. Diners kind of pointing at what they want. And you'll also get like a little, in most places, you'll get like a little card that's just on the table with a pencil. And then that's how you essentially order. All that whole card's got kind of the dim sum menu on it. And then you just tick what you want. And then someone comes over, takes like a little, it's like tracing paper, takes like the top bit off, takes that to the kitchen, make it. And then they leave you with the pad because you reorder as well. So you use like a continuous.
I was going to say, I need more pages.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say it was like, you know, those Brazilian steakhouses or whatever, where you just put like green lights and they're just dumping dim sum on you. But
yeah.
Yeah, that's what I thought you were saying. Because I went to a restaurant when I was on holiday with Joe's family and I didn't realise that's the way it worked. You know, one side of, it's like a beer mat, isn't it? Like one side's like green and the other one's red.
Yeah.
Well, they just kept coming and carving me meat and I was like so full and I was like, God, they're bloody pushy here, aren't they? They kept coming over and I was
they challenging
just like,
me?
Yeah, kept putting like more meat on my, it was like a Brazilian like barbecue restaurant. I just kept bringing it and I thought, fucking hell, like I'm full. Can they just fuck off for 5 minutes?
Everyone around the table telling you, just Miles, just flip it up the other way. And you're like, I don't know what's going on. This food just keeps
pretty
coming.
Much. I was like, they're putting meat on my plate. I'm not even asking for it. I'm saying no to one guy over here and they turn around like the other guy putting meat on my plate on the side. And it was all stressing me out a bit. And then someone said, no, you just need to, you know, flip it over and put it on red. And, you know, I just got a bit of respite for five when I did that. It was nice.
And then Philip State
straight back in.
Philip State walked past and was like, ooh.
Back to green.
Oh dear. Yeah.
But yeah, in the coming segments, we'll explore how dim sum evolved from a roadside refreshment for weary travellers along the ancient Silk Road to a culinary mainstay in the tea houses of Guangzhou and Hong Kong. So whether you're a dim sum devotee or new to the table, join us as we uncover the rich history and vibrant present of this beloved culinary tradition. Let's get started.
That was sick.
Nice. That was good.
That was my Chinese gong. To signal that we have entered the dim sum ritual.
Yeah. You're going to do that for like every chapter of this episode.
Shut the fuck up, Andy.
Fair enough. Right. Well, we're going to start, as we always do, with a bit of a sensory experience. Start with tastes. Pretty difficult to kind of like nail down the taste because there's so many different dishes that make up dim sum. Bit of a kaleidoscope.
You've got seafood ones, you've got meat ones, you've got veggie ones.
Exactly. Bit of a kaleidoscope of flavors. Each dish kind of a unique kind of composition. You've got kind of shrimp dishes with like a har gow wrapper. I don't know if you've seen those before. They're like rice paper wrappers.
Oh, yeah.
I know the ones.
And then you've got soy mai as well, which are again, shrimp wrappers, but with like the orange roe.
Oh, yeah. Before. I've seen those.
Yeah. And then you've got like char sui bao as well, which is like char sui pork.
You've got your bad ones.
In the bao. Yeah, exactly. And then like some veg as well thrown in there. It's not all just like carbs and dumplings and things like that. There is like steamed greens like bok choy and then obviously like different, you know, China's a fucking big place. Don't know if you knew, but China's pretty big, right? and we'll go into it in a moment, but like every dim sum started in one province in China, but it obviously is spread to all these different provinces, and all these different provinces have their own dim sum dishes. So
yeah, like I can imagine.
In Chengdu, where like you've got the Sichuan like peppercorns, dim sum's usually pretty spicy. Ooh. So like you'll have that kind of spin there, and then obviously nearer the coast you'll have more kind of fish dim sum.
Regional differences,
local ingredients. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Go on.
I was just gonna say what would British dim sum look like? Like
fish little, and chips.
Very good question.
Yeah, a little crispy piece of fish.
Yeah,
In a little baby basket or
baby basket.
Or what about, you know, some steamed sprouts just in a bamboo with a pancetta cram?
Maybe a balti pie.
There we go.
A little balti pie.
Pigs in blankets.
There's a restaurant idea. British dim sum. We can do tea. We know we've got tea on lock.
Yeah, we do.
Yorkshire, PG, Tetley. And then, you know, there's just the British dim sum with it.
PG dips.
PG dips. I think there's something there, you know. It's like, yeah, competes with like Toby Carvery. It's like a English dim sum.
Oh, wow, you're going regional. You go national, sorry, straight away.
We're franchising right off the bat. Yeah.
Immediately. Not even prove the success. Immediately franchising.
We're going for it.
I so believe in this idea, I'm putting 100 milli down. Straight away.
Okay, what's the name? So Toby Carvery, you're up against Toby Carvery. So I think you might ask me a name.
Britsum.
Okay.
Britsum. British dim sum.
Nice. Okay. Britsum.
I'm sure there's a better name out there, but I just need a bit more time.
Yeah, I was thinking like Danny's dim sum or like...
Nice. Danny, who's Danny?
Danny Dyer is the spokesperson for it.
You got some fucking sweet.
Go and get your fucking dim sum.
Who's Danny? Who's Toby?
That's a great question.
Oh, he's the Carver... Carver,
yeah, well, Danny's a dim sum man.
Yeah.
There you have it.
It's like the little chef. He's the little chef.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go. So that's the taste. Texture is very similar as well. Equally super diverse. Again, you've got like the pillowy softness of the buns with kind of the rich filling. You've also got some fried stuff in there as well. So they do a lot of like deep fried taro puff, which is very nice.
Taro is like a potato, isn't it? It's like a root.
It's like a purple potato, yeah.
Yeah, because when I get bubble tea, which isn't very often, I tried the taro one once and it was quite
why
nice.
Why did you need to do that qualifier?
Yeah,
then,
why did you feel the need?
Because I just felt like I didn't want to make it sound like I had lots of bubble tea.
Why?
Thought you'd been caught being naughty.
Why are you throwing shade on all the listeners that drink bubble tea?
Well, no, there's no shade. No shade. If you like baba, you have baba. But I'm just saying, I don't have it very often. But yeah, taro, purple, it's nice, milky.
Great. Yeah. Brilliant. Yeah.
That's all I wanted to say.
That yeah, little no, admission fair of guilt for that. Yeah. You did the whole hiding away. I don't even have it.
I don't even have it.
Oh, wow.
I'm pretty sure the vegetable itself isn't milky either. I'm pretty sure that's what they're mixing with it in your bobber.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Your bobber. Proper Brexit pronunciation. Bobber means bobber.
I say it how I see it.
Exactly.
Oh, that's what we love you for.
And the last one, sight as well. I think dim sum is very visually appealing. It's like a feast in its own right in terms of the sight of it. You've got loads of different kind of colours, shapes, sizes. Presentation is usually pretty cool as well, either in the bamboo kind of baskets or in a metal steamer or kind of really nicely presented on a plate. Nice garnishes as well.
Usually quite intricate, aren't they? Like right, yeah, if it's intricate, you know, it's like pastry that's kind of folded in nice neat parcels, and mm-hmm. it takes a lot of like crafting, doesn't it? So it kind of looks nice when it's presented.
It's a feast for the eyes.
Don't they have a little crimp on the top usually?
Some of them will, definitely.
Some of them do, yeah. So later on in the episode, I've got five of kind of the most common dim sum dishes that you'll find. And I've also got five of the, or three, I think it is maybe, of the weirdest dim sum dishes as well. So that'll be a nice little feast for us to delve into. Anyway, let's dive into the origin, shall we? So yeah, very intricate research for this episode. Had to go back a long time. Probably didn't find a lot of the sources that are out there, because a lot of the sources out there will be in Mandarin or Cantonese. But
come on, mate, get Duolingo on. What the hell?
Yeah, I was going to say.
Where's the prep? Where's the prep? I think your passion's gone. I'm not even going to learn a language to get
stuck. Bear with me. Xie xie. Bear with me.
Xie xie.
Chinese cooking. It's one of the oldest and most diverse in the world.
Do it with chopsticks, you know. They stir with chopsticks.
They do, yeah. Not normal ones, though. They've got like long ones.
Really? I'll do it with normal ones. That's why I always burn my bloody fingers.
Yeah, he's getting some cooking chopsticks.
Crikey.
Crikey. Each of the 23 provinces within China has its own cooking style. From the fiery heat of Sichuan, Hunan and Jingzai provinces to the mutton and lamb dishes of Beijing and the kind of province influenced by the invasion of the Tatar and the Mongol people and kind of like Muslim traditions and ingredients as well. So you've got like a real complex, diverse
smorgasbord.
It's perfect.
If you will.
Yeah exactly. Of all of these kind of Chinese regions, it is the cuisine of the Guangdong or Canton province that is the most varied. This is, they're called the Cantonese people. These are the Cantonese people. And they're renowned for eating almost everything. Offal, chicken feet, snakes, snails. They'll eat it. If it swims, if it flies, if it walks, they'll eat it.
You never told us that you were Cantonese, Milo.
Oh, God.
We do have some laughs, don't we? We do have some laughs.
Yeah, you guys do. You have laughs, yeah. Yeah, it's so funny for you guys. This is what I have to deal with on this podcast. Oh, God. These two with like absolutely relentless fat jokes.
Oh, come on.
It's all right.
No, we do have some laughs.
But Cantonese people eat anything, do they?
Sound like my kind of people.
They do, to be fair. I mean, I'll try anything once.
Yeah, that's a good way to live your life.
Yeah. I would probably find it difficult with the snakes. And
Well, even if they're dead. Like, you know that it's been fried up. Like, it isn't going to get you. Mm. Is it not like you're almost getting revenge on them for all the times they scared you?
Maybe this is how you cure your fear of spiders, Miles, is that you eat one.
Nah.
And once you've eaten one, you are no longer, you no longer fear a spider.
Yeah, no longer just a man.
No.
Next weekend,
Spider-Man.
Dom and I are going to catch a spider.
Yeah, and feed you it.
We're going to fry it up. little overnight buttermilk batter.
Where's his spider from? It's in the garden.
It's just in the garden, yeah.
Oh, that's a bit crunchy.
Oh, no, he needs to know, because otherwise how will he overcome the fear?
Well, no, because he'll know that he crushed it with his jaws.
Yeah.
No.
Did it without even thinking.
Make it like a nice little chipotle mayo, maybe.
Ooh.
Like a spider crumb.
Spider crumbs. Little web mayo.
Web mayo. Proper like sticking in my gullet, like
it's like glue.
I don't know. Yeah, I'm not sure about that. Not sure about the spider thing. I don't know. I'll try anything once. I'll have a nibble on a spider, deep fried spider or something.
We should get you one of those ones that you see, you know, where it's like a spider and a lollipop.
I think the fact it's on a stick don't make much difference. But yeah, I mean, when you've been in China, have you seen much of these kind of insect eating or strange kind of things?
Yeah. So like you go to food markets, you know, outdoor food markets, and there'll be loads of sellers selling very questionable looking insects, rodents, reptiles on sticks.
Because, yeah, I remember when you got back, like, I think one of the first times you went and you were like, oh, Miles, it's like eating a packet of Walker's crisps, the equivalent over here, over there.
Oh, yeah.
And just like eating like chicken feet just out of a plastic bag.
Chicken
like,
feet
with
massive.
Some seasoning on it.
Yeah, yeah. Like you go to like the snack aisle and you have like your Lay's and all the, you know, crisps. And then to the right of it, you'll have a section for chicken feet that are just in packets.
Are they packets. Not bare bony?
I've never had one, mate. I couldn't tell you. Oh. I don't think there's no bones in them, though, I don't think.
Just like cartilage.
It's just cartilage,
it's
just
like the skin that they've peeled off.
Yeah, you just peel off and just give it a bit of suck. Mm. Get that down, yeah.
Doesn't sound great.
So nice.
So are we saying any of these kind of creepy crawlies and these strange things are making their way into dim sum?
Yeah.
Not the creepy crawlies, but chicken feet, yes. We'll come to those later. They're listed in our weird dishes.
Okay.
But it is within this kind of rich tapestry that Cantonese cooking kind of envelops that dim sum is thought to have originated. So it is very much thought to have originated within Cantonese culture. There's a few kind of origin stories. Some believe that the origins of dim sum are thought to reach back all the way to the Eastern Jin Dynasty, which was from 317 to 420. Blaze it.
The opium dens would have been stanking. I mean, that's so long ago, that, isn't it? It's like, it's hard to even comprehend. 317, did you say?
317 to 420 AD. Yeah, long time ago.
That's old.
Long time ago. And the legend involves a war heroine.
Oh, legend, opium den.
General Lady Liang. On the battlefield, soldiers who fought valiantly caught the heart of the general. To repay them with gratitude, she gathered civilians to send food to them. Taking a guess.
He's a scorpion.
He's a scorpion. Oh,
thank you.
Oh, yeah. That was well worth fighting 2 weeks for.
Just what I wanted. Thank you. How did you know?
Is there no pork left? Or?
No. Chicken feet. That's all you can have.
Oh, God.
The food portions needed to have been small because they were being transferred to the battle camps. Food in small portions, like dim sum. And of course, like, as a kind of an endearing part of the gesture of thanks, as the food was sent to lightly touch the hearts of the soldiers. Hence, the food in the bamboo baskets was named after the anecdotal memory, a light touch of the heart, which is what dim sum roughly translates to.
Aww. A gesture of thankfulness,
a
touch of the heart.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a very nice story. I couldn't find much else kind of supporting this origin date, but it is thought that this period marks like the inception of what would later evolve into like the cornerstone Cantonese culinary culture.
That's interesting, because when things are kind of like delicately prepared and they're quite small, my mind immediately goes to like aristocrats and kind of food that's prepared for rich people.
Mm.
Whereas maybe like poor peasants were just eating like whole bits of meat and kind of quite simply cooked food. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like the fact that it's actually the transport reasons to the soldiers that made the food small is interesting.
One of the theories, yeah. That is very, very interesting. Like the translation, you know, roughly translates to touch the heart. You know, it's not a dish that's designed to deal with hunger. It's to delight the palate and to make people feel happy. Which is nice.
Yeah, it's the experience of eating it. You know, the you take the lid off, the steam comes out. You got these little gorgeous presented parcels. You get your chopstick. I'll have one. You know, everyone's having a turn. You're passing them around. What are you getting there? Chives.
Chives.
Do you know what I mean? And it's just, you're not just getting the food, you're getting the ritual.
Yeah.
You're getting the experience.
Lovely. Yeah.
And if you're getting tea with it as well, I don't know if the soldiers were having the luxury of tea at this point as well, but
they will have been. Yeah, they will have been.
Yeah.
Yeah, tea.
So, you know, even going around. There you go. That's even more part of the ritual, you know. Everyone's having tea and
what was
part
that?
Of it.
What was that one again?
I was just holding the lid of the teapot and pouring it out. But yeah, it's a nice gift. It's a ritual. It's not just the food. It's the event that you allow in the soldiers.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Absolutely. I did also find a pretty gnarly legend about dim sum that involved executions. Not sure about this one, but I thought it'd be quite cool to include. Legend has it that when a Chinese emperor, couldn't find who, which is why it's not maybe the best source, but when a Chinese emperor was betrayed by one of his subjects, the punishment for it was a slow and painful death, which is known as Ling Shi. The punishment involved the executor slicing the traitor piece by piece, finally killing him by piercing a cleaver through his heart or by touching the heart. This method of punishment continued for a long, long time, and it came to the point where it was finally banned. And so it's thought that like dim sum kind of came somehow out of this, and that it changed over time to mean a more positive meaning, finally resting on touching your heart, as in filling your stomach. Yeah, it's a bit of a loose one that I couldn't really kind of map the two together. But this, I found a couple of articles that really kind of cited this as like, this is how it all started.
Really?
But I don't think
it's
very
likely. Yeah, it's a bit of a stretch, that one. Because obviously you've got the cutting off of the like the torturous body parts, little cuttings or whatever, which is kind of dim sum-y, kind of little pieces maybe. But
it's a bit of a stretch.
Bit of a stretch, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
It's all rather gory for the name of it.
Yeah, I know.
Don't sound appetizing, does it?
No, I think...
That's just human nature though. We don't want the nice story of the gifting. We want the bloodshed and torture.
Exactly.
You know?
Give us the grim stuff. The supposed first reference to dim sum was by a noble lady in the Tang Dynasty, which ran from 618 to 907 AD. This age, by the way, is considered like the golden age of Chinese history. This is kind of the age in which China was reunified after almost 400 years of fragmentation. So it's like a proper golden age.
400 years, and is that just kind of like civil wars happening and just like proper civil unrest
beforehand? Yeah, exactly. Right,
and now they've kind of united as one nation.
Yeah, exactly, brought it under one banner. The reference simply reads,
"I am not ready yet. If you're hungry, you can have some small plates." That's an interesting quote, though. She's not ready to eat, so you know, I'm not hungry, but if you are, have some small shit.
Yeah, have some. Well, she said small plates, not small shit.
Have some small plates.
Yeah. it's interesting. It kind of does align, but again, I'm not really sure how they're relating it back to dim sum, but anyhow.
Yeah.
More concrete sources that I found state that dim sum is part of the Chinese tradition of snacks originating from the Song Dynasty. So a bit further along. I think this one's 960 to 1279. So yeah, a bit kind of further in time. And this kind of links to what you were saying before, Miles, because it involves royal chefs creating various dishes such as minced pheasant, lark tongue, and desserts made from steamed milk and bean paste.
Okay. So they're getting a bit more fiddly, a little bit more prepared.
Yeah, bean paste as well. Chinese, they love bean paste. Not a fan of it, really.
Yeah.
It's like sweet as well. It's like they have that just for dessert.
Yeah.
Red bean paste.
They haven't got many options when it comes to dessert making, have they?
No.
I don't know for what geological reason that is.
The rice or something. Like, you know, if you've got wheat, sugar,
lack of sugar,
flour and stuff.
Yeah.
Lack of sugar, maybe.
Lack of sugar. So they're fermenting beans to get the sugar out of the beans.
Yeah. Bean paste. Guangzhou experienced an increase in commercial travel in the 10th century. And at this time, or at that time, you'd find travellers frequenting tea houses for tea, obviously, and also small portioned meals. So what they were doing was essentially yum cha, which is drinking tea.
You guys don't do any larger portioned meals? just the small ones? Okay. I'll just order two. Of the small plates.
Yeah, I mean, the genesis of kind of dim sum is super intertwined with the ancient Silk Road. You know, you've got all of these tea houses kind of opening up along the Silk Road. You've got weary travelers going from place to place to place, trading their silk. And then you've obviously got, they need to eat as well as rest and drink tea. So dim sum, tea drinking, weary travelers, perfect combination for things to become more popular, things to grow, more and more people going. So more and more tea houses needed, more and more dim sum needed, more bite-sized morsels being enjoyed.
Yeah. I'm guessing also, like, there's so many people enjoying dim sum at this point that maybe there's people returning and saying, have you got anything different on the menu? I kind of had this dim sum last time. And then chefs are thinking of new ways to incorporate new ingredients into dim sum and switch things up maybe.
No, you're right.
Who knows?
Yeah, I've had this great bun. It was so pillowy.
Fermented red bean paste again. Huh. Yeah. That was so 318 AD.
AD.
Other thought that I just had, and this is probably ridiculous, but you know, all these travellers on the Silk Road, you know, bumping into each other to try and sell their wares. Hiya, mate, what have you got to sell? Silk. What about you? Silk. Yeah. Do you want to trade some silk? All right.
Yeah.
Everyone's got silk. Like, anyone on Silk Road not selling silk? Because we need more shit in the ecosystem.
Nah, just silk. That's all I've
just
got.
Silk.
Just silk.
For silk. Yeah. We need to get off this fucking Silk Road, man. We need to get on fucking Wheat Road or something.
Yeah.
Where's Jewel Road? Where's Jewel Street?
Really, I'm sure they had more than just silk, but yeah. No.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd hope so.
Yeah, they had more than silk. It was just the name they gave to the road, Miles.
But yeah, I mean, the tradition of drinking tea, eating dim sum, started around this kind of time, and it's really persisted to this day, really. Families, friends sit around a table for hours telling each other stories, drinking tea, and ordering kind of various amounts of dim sum over those hours. You know, they're not, it's not like going for a meal where you sit down, immediately place your order, get your drinks, food comes, you either maybe stay for a few drinks after that or have some dessert, or just then you just leave. Then they go drink some tea, some friends will arrive, they'll get chatting, they'll maybe order a few dishes, have some more tea, more friends will arrive, those friends will leave, some family will arrive, those family will leave, more and more people kind of coming and going throughout the whole day.
Just like a social experience, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
We'll go into, I've got like the etiquette and some things like that a bit later on, because I thought it was quite cool and I didn't know a lot of it. So we'll go into that later. But for now, we're in the 13th century and we've got these goddamn Mongolians coming around.
God, they're nasty buggers.
Nasty buggers.
Yeah. Well, these Mongolians, they made their mark on China in the 13th century. So much so that the royal court had to retreat to the south, because obviously they were based up in the north. They fled to the south, particularly in Guangzhou, and infused the local dim sum scene with a touch of regal flair. So Guangzhou is, I don't know if you know, but it's like a port city, super bustling, really rich and diverse, fresh ingredients all over the place, because obviously it's near a water source, so like the ground is fertile, so they can grow all
trade routes and things.
Basically the perfect place for a little culinary revolution, I suppose. And here is here, like amidst lively street vendors, tea houses, that dim sum kind of really started to take shape and take root into what it is today. The tea houses became more than just tea houses. They became like eateries, vibrant kind of social spaces where people thrive. They were essentially like pubs, really. They became the Chinese version of pubs, but way healthier and way better food. Like deals were struck there, communities gathered there. Yeah, pubs. It's fucking pubs, lad.
It's a pub.
Yeah.
It's a Chinese pub.
It's a Chinese pub. Yeah.
With dim sum.
You're absolutely right.
It's a nice way to socialise, though, isn't it? You know, you're not having a massive meal and getting all bloated and then getting tired after and feeling like you need to go home to sleep. You're just kind of like keeping yourself topped up with a bit of nice food that's coming out. You're drinking, socialising, like you said, having a good time.
Yeah, of course.
My kind of night, that.
Sounds lovely.
Yeah, we should go. So it's kind of this way up until the 19th century, you know, kind of things continue to evolve, but it's not until the 19th century where things kind of really surge for dim sum. Initially, kind of, you've got obviously the tea houses, but then things, specific kind of dim sum restaurants then start to open up, because not everyone can sit around for 4, 5, 6 hours drinking tea and having dim sum. Some people just want the dim sum part of it. So, you know, you start to see restaurants like that, and then you start to see like kind of some of the dishes that are common today. So like the char siu pork, fresh rice noodles kind of enter the fray. And you've also got like the introduction of culinary practices from across China as well. So like I said before, 23 provinces, mad diverse in terms of what they eat. And this kind of diversity starts to show within the dim sum dishes from around the regions, which is interesting.
I know we're in the 19th century now, but just going back to the Mongols, what was the outcome there? Because obviously they came in from the north, didn't they? They kind of took over a lot of China, didn't they?
They did.
Yeah. Did they succeed? Or
yeah, they took over. Not. Well, I mean, they owned like half the planet at one point.
Yeah, they owned
But
it was one of those that like only lasts a few generations sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly. I think there was different Khans that did conquered bits of China with differing success. I'm not sure they ever owned the whole of China. I think didn't get the south areas.
That was hold out south, I think.
Was that one of the reasons they built the Great Wall? To keep the Mongols out? Or was that a different Hunnic?
I think it might have been for like inter-Chinese relations. I don't think it was for the Mongols, but it might be. Who knows, you know?
Yeah, I can't remember. Okay. Should remember that.
That's interesting. I wonder if any of the like dishes and ingredients that the Mongols brought into China fed their way into dim sum as well.
I don't really think the Mongols really had that much of a culinary tradition, because they were like nomadic people, right? So they were just going from place to place to place.
Just getting what they could on the way.
Just living off the land and sustenance. They might, because they weren't farmers, were they? They didn't have agriculture.
No.
I remember I used to go to a place called P.F. Chang's, which is a Chinese restaurant. And they used to do a dish called Mongolian beef that was really yummy. But it's probably like some sort of modern American twist. Yeah, American.
Well, it's just beef that's been just like absolutely savage.
Yeah. Just like, pillaged. Really done it.
Yeah. Yeah, proper just made a mess out of. nice dish though. Nice dish. It turns up, it's a mess, but it's lovely. So we're back in the so we're back in the 19th century now, aren't we? Where it's like there's specific restaurants for dim sum, and
exactly,
it's starting to be a little bit elevated, I'm guessing.
Yeah, exactly. And you're starting to see kind of the influence of the vast kind of culinary landscape that China offers. Mm. You've got like the Han Chinese that are bringing kind of their regional recipes. You've obviously got the Guangdong province, which is in the south, warmer climates. So obviously different ingredients there. You've got influences from Suzhou and Hangzhou, which they mainly bring like the vegetarian dishes. And then you've got Beijing bringing kind of the desserts and sweet treats as well. And then you've also got like the Muslim inspired dishes as well, because obviously a lot of Muslim links with kind of like your more steamed dumplings and things like that. And also you've got the Muslims traveling along the Silk Road, bringing an influence that way as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. By the 1860s, you've also got like foreign flavors like ketchup, Worcestershire sauce and curry beginning to kind of influence Ooh. Dim sum and enter the mix, into the dishes. I'm not just saying...
Is this opposed by any diehard dim sum purists? I mean,
there probably was at the time, right? You're always going to have people resistant to change. But
yeah,
I don't think so. I think they just saw it as like an ingredient and they just incorporated
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Well, I guess when dim sum is like a concept, it's kind of baked into it that it's
pretty
free to be experimented with. Yeah, exactly. So...
Yeah, exactly. But I think that's what's great about it. They take aspects of loads of different cultures that have kind of spread into China, and then they just make dishes around that and just make them small, kind of super palatable, and allow you to try and, you know, to taste all these different kind of things.
Yeah.
That you wouldn't really get to try.
Well, it's like you said, yeah, that's interesting, because it's like you're going to be sat for quite a while eating lots of different types of dim sum. So you want a variety in there. You don't want to be tasting stuff that's the same over and over. You kind of want each to taste quite different.
It's the spice of life, as they say.
They do say that. They do. So fast forwarding a little bit now to the 1920s. 1920s, you get tea pavilions, which is where the elite would scrutinize the quality of tea leaves and water temperature. The upper class getting involved with dim sum now and having their take on it.
Gentrified dim sum.
Just a bit higher class. And once these richer guests were satisfied, they would be sat down and they were presented with a pencil and a booklet listing the available dim sum. So this is where this is thought to have originated. A waiter would then tear off their orders out of the booklet so that the kitchen could pan fry, steam, bake, deep fry, whatever it may be, these dishes on demand. They'd dine in privacy and in comfort in the pavilion, and the servers would kind of bring out all of these different dishes on their arms, kind of arranged on trays, climbing up and down the stairs, because the kitchens were obviously on the bottom floor. They were sitting on the top floor, so they had to carry all these fucking heavy bamboo baskets and whatever else up these long ass stairs. Grim. He steps in.
Fair enough. Yeah, why not? So these rich people are scrutinising it. They're like, they're wanting it to be exact. They want the temperature of the water to be a certain temperature. They're proper picking it apart.
Yeah, it's like how hipsters are with coffee nowadays. Single origin beans.
Yeah.
Me, really. That's how I am with coffee.
I was going to say, this is... You're preaching to the choir over here.
Coarseness of the grind.
Yeah, that's very important. If you want a good pressure for your espresso, yeah, that's very important.
Shut up.
You got to make sure your beans are moist before you grind them as well. Always make sure...
You don't want these beans. Little pathetic...
You're not spraying your beans now, are you? You get those like metal
aerators
things.
Yeah.
Brush the top.
Yeah.
Give the top a little tickle.
Literally pathetic.
Don't do anything that.
It's all part of the journey.
Aerates
nah,
it.
Nah. Dosser.
Piss in your coffee machine.
Then we'll see who's laughing. Then we'll see whose beans are moist.
Yeah. Look at the crema on that.
No, I think you might need to get your kidneys checked, mate.
There should be no crema. Yeah,
there should be no crema.
That is an oily shot.
An oily shot.
You need to get your pressure dial changed. Right? That's fucking came out like a rocket.
But what we have realised is that Andy's basically a 1920s Chinese aristocrat.
I am.
Maybe he's the one that's Cantonese, not you. We missed it all along because it's there in the name.
It's in the name. Yeah, you're
get
right.
It. Do you get it?
Yeah, I do. Andy Cantonese.
Cantonese. I've never heard that before. Why have we not used that before?
I want a whole day of dim sum next time I come to yours, Andy. I just want you bringing it out every half an hour.
I'll sort you out.
I need some oolong. It's been too long. Where did I get that from?
Temperature's not right.
I mean,
these leaves are terrible.
Yeah. This silk isn't from the Silk Road.
But no, I would have gone on very well in 1920s China, would I want to live in China in 1920? Pretty horrendous things on the way. Yeah. But in terms of dim sum, it's a good time though. You've got, obviously, with kind of the rich getting involved, they are paying the very best chefs to innovate on the world of dim sum. And you get, you know, a variety. I think every generation, I feel like, brings its own spin or has its own spin on dim sum and introduces new dishes. Fusion dishes as well come in. You've also around this time got the you know, like the thin wrappers that are used for dim sum to stop like buns and things like that sticking to the bottom of the bamboo.
The kind of like the paper.
Yeah.
In the bottom.
Grease booth.
How many times have you eaten that paper?
Yeah, I thought it was wonton wrapper.
Yeah.
I just staffled it. It was a bit chewy, but I got it.
Take the sheet out, put a bit of meat in the middle of it, wrap it up, shove it in.
Put it in the gob and push the meat in.
What you did is you peeled the bun off, put the bun back in the steamer and just set the paper.
My dad always tells me a funny story. When he was in the Navy, they went for a Chinese once and they took this lad with them that had never been to a Chinese restaurant before. And they ordered ribs and the bowl of hot water with lemon in it came to clean your fingers. Drank the whole thing. And I was like, oh, mate. It's not what? He thought it was like a palate cleanser type thing, but...
Wow.
Yeah.
Nah, that's not right.
Oh, where are we at? During the... Yeah, so kind of moving things along in the world of dim sum, we come towards the Chinese Civil War, which raged from 1927... to 1949. Many dim sum.
They thought they were going into another 400 years of shit here.
Yeah.
It's a slippery slope, lads. We're going back.
We've only just got out of this.
Straight back in. Here we go.
Yeah.
Obviously caused a lot of disruption, as you can imagine. Civil wars do.
You would have thought.
Many dim sum.
Sean's back.
Sean Connery's.
Baby.
Portion of dim sum for 007. Steamed, not salted.
love Sean. Sure, he comes out every episode, Sean, doesn't he?
He's just one of
near
our
and
faves.
Dear to our hearts.
Yeah, he's like the fourth crew member almost, isn't
he? He is. Yes, he is. If you ever make any merch, it's got to have Sean Connery on it. Yeah, sure.
We'll get him on. Get him on as a guest.
Yeah, definitely.
I don't know. he's
yeah, he'll talk about like, oh, we've done Haggis, haven't we?
Yeah, but he's died, doesn't he?
He's died?
Yeah, we'll just he's not around anymore.
He's not?
What do you mean?
Are you sure?
Sean Connery's dead.
Sean Connery's not dead.
He's not, is he?
Yeah, boys, he died last year.
I believe he didn't die last year. He died in 2020.
There you go.
Was it the vid?
On Halloween.
What did he dress up as?
A skeleton.
Do you boys not know who's dead?
Nah, I thought he was still alive.
We're not. Yeah, well, we're still going. Yeah. Well, we won't get him on.
Well, no, we could like use some AI.
Yeah,
and, pull it together, right?
Just shoot the shit with him, yeah. Why not?
Yeah, died in his sleep, age 90. At his home in Lyford Cay, which sounds, you know, like somewhere in the UK. No, it's in Bahamas.
That's a good way to go, that.
Yeah, that's how I'd like to go.
Anyway, Chinese Civil War, as disrupting as that tangent was. A lot of people's lives were turned upside down.
Brilliant stuff, that. Brilliant.
A lot of people's lives were turned upside down. A lot of dim sum chefs fled to Hong Kong and very much enhanced the local dim sum scene there with their expertise. And then you also had a lot of people fleeing to San Francisco and to the States as a whole. And then you get the earliest dim sum restaurant opening up in the 19th century, kind of around this time in San Francisco and New York. I think it's the late 1930s. You get some US newspapers start to reference dim sum.
Can't imagine the New Yorkers like were that welcoming with that.
No, I mean, to be fair, Chinese restaurants in the US had been around for a while. It's just maybe the dim sum, I think, was first mentioned around this time. Yeah.
All right.
And I feel like a lot of these Chinese restaurants probably did offer dim sum from the beginning, but it wasn't really a thing until like the late 1980s, actually, which is interesting. Yeah. I think the reason why maybe it didn't kick off so much in the US is because, like, obviously it's a Chinese meal. It's like a communal dining and social experience that can last hours. You know, it's customary for large groups to stay and enjoy dishes together that we've ran through that. Social kind of super social activity. Diners tend to go to restaurants early, around 10 a.m. Rather than ordering a whole table of food, as we said, they order small amounts, little tidbits, cup of tea, read newspaper, wait for friends, family to join them. And it's essentially a whole day experience. It starts in the late morning.
So it starts at like brunch.
Yeah. And lasts
like a brunch thing.
Well into the afternoon.
Do they serve alcohol at these
planning on getting a litty
events?
Not usually, mate. It's normally just tea. Tea's like the big thing. Yeah. I did manage to find the first ever mention of dim sum in an English language press from 1928. And it's from the Argus, which is weirdly a Brighton based newspaper. Not really sure why, but this is what the columnist had to say.
Yeah, no Chinese meal is complete without some succulent dim sums. Pork minced with water chestnuts and enclosed in paste.
Yeah. No Chinese meal. No succulent Chinese meal is complete without some succulent dim sums.
Yeah. Do you want to go down the lanes in Brighton and have some Chinese dim sum? So what is he actually saying there? So he's saying no Chinese meal is complete without some succulent dim sums. Pork minced with water chestnuts and enclosed in paste. No Chinese meal is complete without it.
There you have it. Straight from the Argus. Straight from the Seagull himself.
I mean, some people have it. It's kind of eaten as a starter sometimes, isn't it? If people go to a Chinese restaurant, they'll sometimes have dim sum as like an entree.
I think that's just like our culture just obsessed with like a starter, main course and dessert.
Bastardization of it, if you will.
Just we're obsessed with like having a big meal as like our otherwise we
sit
don't
down,
feel
feast.
Yeah, exactly. Otherwise we don't feel satisfied.
Yeah, true. So yeah, we're kind of like retrofitting dim sum into our way of eating.
Exactly.
Which is why we're often having it as just a starter. Yeah, very interesting.
Exactly. Cool. Yeah, so I wanted to dive into like some dim sum dishes, really. I wanted to dive into the diversity of it. Obviously, we've been through kind of all of the factors in terms of like the different regions affecting dim sum and the different climates affecting the ingredients that they use and therefore the dishes that they create. Here's a question for you boys. Another little guessing game.
Oh, we love these.
How many types of dim sum are there across China? Now, you can give me... just give me a figure.
Milo's going first because I always go first and then he just guesses a really boring version to make sure he wins. So it's his turn.
Okay.
405.
1,972.
Dom, you are almost there. There's at least 2,000 types of dim sum across China.
Whoa.
And over one...
That menu must be so long.
Could you imagine being that chef?
Scrolling it out.
Yeah, imagine being in the kitchen.
I've ordered in about 3 weeks.
Yeah, I'll have number 1,414. I'll have number 2 and a 2,170.
Nice.
We'll get that right at the bottom of the list. It's proper experimental.
Because I order with numbers when I go to any restaurant that's not English. Don't even attempt. Don't even to say it.
Not even tapas. You don't order. You don't order patatas bravas. No. You order just potatoes.
Potatoes bravo.
I always have a go. I always do have a go. I usually get laughed at by the waiter.
Would you ever guess he'd have been trying all these exotic words by how you are up here, you know?
Well, you know, you got to cut your teeth somewhere.
No, for sure. The customary kind of practice of dim sum, like ordering kind of family style, you know, ordering bit by bit, it really allows kind of diners to embark on a gastronomic journey. You get to try a whole range of different dishes in a shared kind of social environment, which is really cool. Really cool. I've had some really interesting dim sum dishes in my life in China, Japan, Singapore.
Oh, shut it. But I think what you're saying there is so true because it's like a conversation starter, isn't it? Like as a social thing to do, you might like have a piece of one and you say, oh, like that flavour in there, I'm not sure what that is. Yep. And then you're all kind of sat across from each other talking about it. Mm-hmm. It gives you kind of something to talk about.
Yeah, no, it's great. And if you go with like your wife as well, you can order dishes that you know she's not going to like. So then she doesn't want it. And you're just left with
four
salted egg buns that she don't like.
Yeah. She'd never have let you order that many just for yourself.
No, exactly. So she'll have a bite and be like, oh, I don't fancy that. And I'm like,
Don't
worry, Hoover's coming in.
I wonder if like that influences the order in which you order stuff as well. Like you might go to order some dim sum and the first one you get is something a bit more of a subtle flavour maybe. You kind of ease yourself in and then you structure it in a way that makes
sense to you.
Culinary, palatable sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or you could structure it like if things go well together, maybe.
Yeah.
pair up different dishes together. So you might get some veg and some buns to counterbalance one another.
Yeah. Those two dim sum portions, dishes go well together. Let's get two of those. And then, you know, not that one. This one.
Why are we getting a role play of you and Joe at a restaurant together?
Not that. That doesn't go with that. You idiot.
What the hell are you thinking? You idiot.
Oh, my God.
Dear.
So as dim sum traversed through time, we've seen it kind of transition from a simple kind of tea house offering to a really sophisticated culinary tradition relished in all over the world now, pretty much. The kind of evolution from a roadside snack to an integral part of Chinese dining culture reflects its kind of enduring appeal and adaptability.
Versatility.
Exactly. And it resonates with most people, I feel. You're savouring food surrounded by loved ones.
What more do you want?
Would you want from a dining experience? But you get dim sum offerings continue to evolve even to this day. Managed to find a quote from a dim sum chef called Jowett Yu, who heads up the hip, eye-popping Chinese kitchen, which is called Ho Li Fook.
Oh, they've only got it.
Oh, that's great.
Great.
What are they like?
It's based in Hong Kong, and this is what he had to say on dim sum.
The dim sum offerings are evolving for a few reasons. One is there are fewer and fewer cooks doing the trade. Two is that the average age of dim sum chefs is around 60 years old in Hong Kong. Three is that the new style of dim sum is eschewing heavy fat and making it smaller and elaborately shaped, like, say, a cartoon character or a goldfish.
Wow.
So he's saying they're getting more kind of like elaborate and fiddly, and less people are actually able to make them.
Mm. Wow.
Yeah, they're not using fat as much. Heavy fat within the dim sum, trying to make them a little bit healthier.
Bit of a lighter, little touch.
Is that the word eschewing? Eschewing.
Yeah. It means to deliberately not use. Stain.
You're shooing them away.
Okay. So number three is that the new style of dim sum is eschewing heavy fat and making it smaller. But I like the heavy fat.
And you like it bigger,
don't
you?
Like it big.
I like it big, less fussy and more fatty. So I don't really like the direction that modern day dim sum's headed, really.
No, not a fan. Not a fan.
No, I want it as it was in the tea houses during the 400-year Civil War.
Okay. Well, I think there's still some nice dishes out there for you. Here are five of the most popular types of dim sum. I'm going to read out all five, and then you boys have got to tell me what would you order out of them all. The first one is har gao, which is essentially shrimp dumplings. These little delicate translucent dumplings filled with juicy shrimp, often seasoned with bamboo shoots and sesame oil.
Sounds delightful.
Cute.
Oh. Sui mai, which are pork dumplings. These are open-topped steamed dumplings with a filling of seasoned ground pork and shrimp, often topped with the crab roe, the orange crab roe.
Sounds good.
Got the juices going.
Got a little smirk on his face. He's warming up, ladies and gentlemen.
He's got a sheet ready. This pen. Number three. This will be his favourite. Char sui bao, or BBQ. Pork buns.
Yeah.
Fluffy steamed buns filled with sweet and savoury barbecued pork, a blend of tender meat and rich sauce.
That does sound good, to be fair. I'm on that.
They just know how to deal with pork.
they know the way around a pig, don't they?
They do. Yeah. They just know it.
Yeah, they just know it.
Well,
they just
know it. Crispy, soft, juicy.
Number four is Cheong Fun, which is a rice noodle roll, and that involves soft, steamed rice noodle sheets rolled around fillings like shrimp, beef, or vegetables, and it's usually served with a sweet soy sauce.
Sounds nice.
And then the last one, dessert, you've got egg tarts, which are buttery flaky pastry cups that are filled pastry cups filled with a smooth sweet egg custard, often enjoyed as a dessert or a sweet end to the meal. They love custard in China, I can tell you that. I've had custard a lot over there. Custard buns, custard salted egg buns.
Custard is milk and eggs, isn't it? Heated together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they do like custard. I've seen quite a few like custard buns. Mm. When I used to live in London, on Chinatown, they used to have them like in the windows of all the like bakeries.
Yep.
Never tried one though. I should have. I was just always homing in on the pork ones. No room for put. When you have two pork buns and then you have taro bubble tea on the way back to the office, and you've got the tapioca balls in the bottom, you know, that's a meal in itself, really.
They don't rest easy, do they? Them pearls. They'll get you.
No, that's get you. Frog spawn.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fun.
Fun. Yeah, very fun.
You know, or even just like getting the thing with the film on the top and you have to stab it in. It's fun. I love that bit.
Just the whole experience, start to finish.
Tactile experience for you.
Yeah.
They're quite intimidating, I find, going in though, to some bobber places.
Yeah.
Because there's very rarely many people in there. And then the menus are never normally that great either. So you have to
really figure out.
And like, I've been to places where they ask you like what level sweetness you want, like percentage sweetness.
Yeah, I've had that.
And it's like, fuck.
A range of like 1 to 5.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, how how sweet's number 3?
Yeah, exactly. There's no benchmark for it.
No. It's just a complete guessing game.
Yeah, mental. Anyway, so.
All the different teas, flavors. Yeah,
all the different teas.
Let's do bubble tea, because that'll be a fun episode.
That'd be a good one. Even like ice density, they ask you how much ice you want.
Yeah, how much ice?
It's all in percentages. You have to be a fucking engineer to order bubble tea. So we've had the nice sounding dishes. Sorry, which of them are you going for? Is it the
pork? Yeah, the barbecue pork, definitely.
Yeah.
Just sounds sick.
Fair point. So we've had the nice stuff. Let me give you 3 of the not so nice stuff.
I bet you one's got chicken feet in.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the first one. Chicken feet, feng shui.
They might be nice though. We just don't.
They can't be bone in there if they're wrapping it up.
No. So not all dim sum is wrapped up in a bun.
Oh, what the hell?
Or a dumpling.
Sometimes it's just as is.
Sometimes it's just as is, and you get like, you know, vegetables as is.
You just clearly haven't got strong enough teeth, Dom.
No, clearly not. But chicken feet, often referred to as phoenix claws on dim sum menus. They are a delicacy in Cantonese cuisine. They are usually steamed. Which is grim, marinated in a flavorful sauce and served with a dipping sauce.
Wow.
Right. I mean, there's been a lot of famine over the years in China, hasn't there? And I feel like a lot of the regular people had to just resort at times to just eating whatever they could. And I think from that experience, that trauma, you end up with a modern cuisine that includes all sorts of different things. But
yeah, I feel like
it is what it is.
They've done a good job with the marketing there by calling them phoenix claws. I feel like that makes them sound a little bit more palatable.
Yeah, they've tried to rebrand that. I've just I just searched the bones and chicken feet that you eat, and yeah, apparently there are.
They'll be small enough that you can kind of digest them though. They won't be like your stomach acids.
Approach will
be able
to them like they're chicken wings. Gnaw at them until you reach the bones. You can even suck the skin and flavouring from the toes if you're into that sort of thing. This is on. This is on. Microsoft Copilot is in beta, but that can't be right. Wow. It's linking off to some.
It's getting a bit saucy.
Yeah.
Suck the toenails. It's
literally sourced that quote as well. You can even suck the skin and flavouring from the toes if you're into that sort of thing.
What else have we got?
So you've got
strange ones.
Steamed tripe. Or Ngao Pak Yip.
Tripe's not the one.
Well, you had tripe sandwiches in Italy, so.
I did. It was good, though. I enjoyed that. This doesn't sound so great. It's obviously tripe is the edible lining of a cow's stomach, seasoned and steamed to create a tender and flavorful dim sum. Chewy in texture.
Okay.
I think it was called Lambrodotta, maybe, is the dish that I had in Florence. That was not steamed, I don't think. I think mine was pan fried, which is. Don't know, seems better. Just anything fried seems a bit better.
Just more caramelization.
Last one, probably the worst, maybe, I'd say.
Okay.
Steamed chicken blood jelly.
What the name?
Ooh.
We're not vampires. That's not right.
Gugao, maybe, probably not.
It's a no for me.
It's a jelly-like substance made from the coagulated blood of chickens, seasoned with soy sauce, sesame oil, and other seasonings. And the description of the texture I found was, it has a unique texture and a flavour that might not be for everybody. Which
it's like admitting.
Yeah.
At least they're aware of it.
Maybe shit. Yeah. Yeah. You may find this whole...
We've thrown this one together, put a lot of thought into it. Don't know about the end product, if I'm honest, lads. See if you like it. Probably might not.
It's like a Haribo with more death.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, you boys wouldn't turn your nose up a bit of haggis, would you?
I was going to say that. Well, that's blood in it, in a stomach lining.
And people do steam haggis as well. Never had it steamed.
Yeah.
People do that.
Yeah. But are they adding gelatin to it to make it jelly? Or is it just...
It's just naturally coagulated, I think.
God, the word, even coagulated.
Yeah, it's not great, is it? In blood jelly is just not what you'd call it either, is it?
Whoever did the phoenix thing for the chicken feet needs
a word with that.
At this one.
Yeah, yeah. No, yeah. Absolutely right. Cool, so I just wanted to end the episode with some dim sum and yum cha etiquette, because I think it's quite an interesting story behind some of the etiquette. And if we ever go dim sum together, we'll know the rules. And also the listeners will know the etiquette as well, so they can follow that when they are partaking.
We might chat some shit, but sometimes you learn something.
Very much so, Dominic. That's the aim of our podcast. Yep. So people learn things. Firstly, it is super important not to reach over the table to grab a basket of your preferred variety of dim sum. Never reach over. It's fairly similar to British table manners. Like, you should always ask someone.
Yeah, you ask somebody to pass you rather than you reach over them. You know, it's just good manners. You don't want to get stuff in people's food, you know.
No, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So I think that's fairly standard. Yeah. A uniquely Chinese rule, though, involves tapping the table to thank the person who pours your tea. If you're single, you tap with the index finger. If you're married, you tap with the two, so the index and the middle.
Getting a bit culty now. I feel like we're in a little Masonic meeting.
You're almost right. It's an interesting story. So it goes back to China's imperial history, and it involves the Emperor Qianlong of the Qing Dynasty. The story goes that the emperor went to enjoy yum cha with locals at a kind of a local tea house, and he wanted to experience everyday life of his subjects. To avoid recognition, he traveled incognito, but obviously, you know, accompanied by a security in case any incident should occur. The emperor shocked his staff by serving them tea, and the staff essentially needed to come up with a gesture which would show their enormous appreciation to the emperor without giving away his identity. You know, there was a ritual that involved bowing three times to the emperor, but obviously he's meant to be incognito.
No, he's undercover.
Yeah.
Exactly. So they needed to come up with a little symbol of how they could thank him. And that was how they decided to bend their fingers to tap the table three times. And that's where the gesture is thought to have come. Very cool.
That's mad. They were just probably like sheer panic mode. Like, we need to thank him some way.
Yeah. Exactly.
But we don't want to ruin his disguise.
Cheers, buddy.
I love that the king was just like, for something to do, I want to experience the life of a peasant.
I'm going to fucking rattle them all. Watch this.
Yeah, I'm going to pour them tea. Blow their mind. Oh, God. Can you imagine being the unlucky sod that's just like in the tea house that just sees this random guy next to him eating dim sum? I don't know, he says something horrible to him.
Emperor's a proper rat, isn't he? Caused a famine last year, the fat bastard.
What is he?
Fat fucking bastard. Yeah. Yeah, if he walked in this place now, I'd spit in his face. Oh, dear.
But yeah, super cool origin story, yeah. I think. Anyway, let's wrap things up, shall we? Just like a dim sum. Yeah, I mean, from its ancient origins along the Silk Road to the bustling tea houses of Cantonese culture, dim sum has evolved that continues to delight and unite people over shared tables around the world. It stands as a testament to the power of food in bridging cultures and fostering connections, inviting us all to partake in its rich, storied legacy. So go out and have some dim sum with your mates and your family and really try some new things. Get out of your comfort zone. Try some dishes that maybe never seen this one before. Not sure about it. Just try it.
Try it.
Most of all,
9 times out of 10, you're going
to
like
try it with your family and your friends, because it's a bloody social thing as well. Talk to somebody rather than looking at your phone all the time, for God's sake.
Take everyone out and just sit in a dim sum restaurant for 6 hours.
Get yourself involved. Dive into the heart of Chinese culinary artistry.
There you go.
Nice. Dim sum. Of a lot of the recent episodes that we've done, this is the one that I have most wanted to be eating whilst we're talking about.
Yeah.
I've had a hankering since we started this for a little bowl of steamed dumplings. It's been a hard one to listen to you talk for so long without any.
And on that pleasant note.
Some of us have got to do it.
Some of us have.
Well, there you go. The history of dim sum. I hope you guys enjoyed that as much as we did. Thank you very much for listening. If you're enjoying the podcast, feel free to give us a rating wherever you listen to it. And yeah, share it with a friend. That would mean a lot.
Just like a dim sum that you'd share with a friend. Why not this episode?
Why not this episode?
Exactly. Yeah,
maybe all gather around the kitchen table and listen to us boys. Yeah. for it. And have some dim sum, maybe.
Yeah, and a bit of oolong, why not?
Why not? Yeah. Perfect accompaniment. Right,
anyway, I think we should sign off, lads, with a little...
Right, well, there you go. Thank you for listening. Yeah, we'll see you in 2 weeks' time for the next episode.
Bye.
Bye, guys.